All right, welcome. We're here with Dr. John Ackerman. He's the Suicide Prevention Coordinator for the Center for Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital in Columbus. I'm really glad you could come in and join us today and talk about some of the really important work that you do. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me, Ken.
Why don't you just first outline, obviously, the fact that this position exists. No offense to you, it's probably not a good thing for society. It's great that we have a prevention coordinator, but it's sad that we have to have this obviously be something that we have to spend so much time and money on. And I guess tell me why that is, John. This is a problem that's been around throughout humanity, obviously, but in recent years has really gotten a lot of attention.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it sort of jokingly, but I agree. I tell people I'm a clinical psychologist by trade, and if I could do away with my position completely because there's no longer a need to address youth suicide, I would do it in a heartbeat. But unfortunately, we know this is a growing issue in our both locally and nationally. And really, the best thing that we can do is be getting out in front of this with education, community support, and screening, which your article talked about. So there are many solutions out there. There is hope, but we're at a time where we can't ignore it. We need to move forward and make sure that we're equipped to deal with it.
And the center began, correct me if I'm wrong, about 5 years ago now, was it?
Yes, okay. Actually, I looked that up. I wasn't quite sure. We're a little over 5 years old, and again, I feel like we're doing some good work, but there's a lot more to be done.
So what exactly do you do then? There's so much to this topic. What do you focus on at the center?
Our primary aim is really to make sure that schools are equipped with the training and infrastructure to make sure they can do suicide prevention effectively. So our job is to make sure that when we're partnering, we have the resources available to make sure that the schools can embed this in their health curriculum, in their school day, in their school year, to make sure it's not just a training and then we leave, that this is something that's really part of the culture, and that kids are able to talk about it, to seek support, to know who to reach out to, that the staff are more confident and comfortable being able to address this issue, and then making sure the community is part of that effort. I think a lot of times you'll see, even in the media, that when there is a youth suicide, it's so tragic and hard to comprehend that people want to figure it out. People want to assign blame or point to one issue that was unfortunately part of the equation. But what we know is that suicide is complex, youth suicide is complex, and there aren't usually easy answers. So in that quest for why, we sometimes simplify it and don't really get to the thing that we should be focusing on, which is how do we help those who are exposed grieve? How do we make sure there are resources to make sure it doesn't happen again? And so that's one part of what we do. The other part is we make sure our hospital system at Nationwide Children's Hospital is really equipped to ask the right questions. So we do screening at the hospital for all kids with behavioral health concerns, age 10 and up as well, and follow up with risk assessments and safety plans to make sure those kids are getting their needs met. And then we work in the community as well to make sure that organizations that support youth are also equipped to deal with it. So we work with clubs and other organizations, faith-based communities, camps, and others, particularly in the summer, to make sure that their staff are equipped with the resources and knowledge to move forward, because it is a scary topic. It's a tough one to talk about. So when you have more people with the eyes open and the skills to move forward and support kids, we're going to be in a better shape. It's not a one person or a one program deal to reduce youth suicide. It's going to take all of us. And fortunately, we all have a role, and we can make a difference.
Well, I was going to ask you that. You know, talk about focusing on the schools. This is something relatively recent where schools are paying a lot more attention to this. Was it more in the old days? Was it more of, hey, you know, you take care of this at home and school's a place to learn and you don't really. Now they're really focusing on the whole child, are they not? A lot more.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned in the article, this was not a topic that schools were knocking down our doors to get into to their buildings. When we first started, it was a lot of trying to explain that the research and the data really backs the idea that doing prevention, helping kids have the language to deal with this, and screening are part of what will keep our kids safe. But schools, like many families and like many faith-based communities, they sometimes believe that if we talk about it, we're going to put the idea in someone's head. And actually, we know very, very clearly that that's not the case. If a person's already considering suicide, then bringing that up will give them an opportunity to feel heard and get the ball rolling in terms of the next steps. If they're not considering it, you don't put the idea in their head. They they don't become more distressed, they don't become more agitated. So it's really, in our case, now we've screened nearly 40,000 kids, and that is our experience repeatedly. If there's a kid who's struggling, they're very glad we asked the question. If there's a kid who is not experiencing suicide risk, then they say no and move on. But what we do know is it's very likely, given all the statistics, that a person, even if they are not struggling with suicide in their younger years, wonderful. Fortunately, most people do not consider suicide, and most people do not engage in suicidal behavior. But it is common enough that they will encounter it among a friend, among a colleague, among a roommate. And so knowing what to do and how to respond, just like learning CPR, is something that we should all do, and that's going to make a difference.
Well, and you know, they're spending a third of their day, 200 days a year in school, so and interacting with so many people, or is at home they might not. It just makes sense that schools be more aware of this. Tell me a little bit about how the screenings work, because part of this is, as you said, embedded in curriculum, and I know it has been in a lot of schools in the health curriculum or other parts of their curriculum. But the screenings themselves are very structured. Tell us a little about that.
Yeah, the screenings occur within the context of the prevention program. So you've typically got two class periods on back-to-back days where you're learning all about the warning signs of suicide, what to look for, how to respond to friends, how to get help, what are the effective and unhelpful ways to respond to warning signs when you see them. And then what we do know is that on one hand, young people do not proactively reach out to adults to disclose suicide risk. So only about 25% of parents, for example, know when their young person is having thoughts of suicide or if they've attempted suicide. So you've got this lack of disclosure on the one hand. And then on the other hand, what we do know is if you ask very direct questions in an appropriate format with validated measures, young people will answer these questions directly and do want support. So the screening really supplements this education in a way that allows some of those gaps to be closed. Do we identify every single child who is at risk for suicide? No, we do not, because some young people are highly invested in not sharing this information. But it is more than you think. It is more than I thought going into this. We know that there's a lot of burden, a lot of stigma and shame. Yet when we ask these questions, we consistently get a fraction, whether that's around 5-7% of young people answering, yes, I have struggled with thoughts of ending my life. I have attempted suicide, and therefore we can get those kids early help. We know that it typically takes a young person about 8 to 10 years from the onset of their symptoms of any mental health condition to get support. So from our framework, I would much rather see these young people getting help earlier in their lives when it's less severe, before they've reached the point in time when a crisis or an emergency department visit is required, and just reduces that time that they would spend suffering and thinking that they are alone or thinking that there's something wrong with them. We really want to make sure we go upstream, and this is one really good way to do it. So you might think, oh, it's a suicide screen, so the only thing we're looking for are those highest risk individuals. No, we're actually identifying a lot of kids who are having emerging depression, emerging suicide risk, and we catch them early, get them support, link them with mental health, and then you've done something that helps the young person, helps the family and the community, and use those resources that we have that are so thin in the first place effectively. So I think that's one of the reasons it's really helpful.
Well, and you mentioned this earlier, how it's catching kids that perhaps wouldn't have been caught otherwise. That's got to be one of the most gratifying things. And one of the reasons, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, is that kids can talk about their colleagues, their classmates that they see that may be struggling as well, you know? So it opens up that avenue where they can say, well, I'm okay, but, you know, so-and-so maybe isn't. I mean, there's administrators at some of the schools I spoke with for the story you talked about that I wrote this week on screenings told me that there were kids that were not on their radar as having any issues. You know, you hear this all the time, the quiet kid or the kid who seems to have everything together, that kind of thing. It is catching some of those kids.
Absolutely. And what we say to schools is that, first and foremost, suicide doesn't discriminate. No school's immune. We work with private schools, public schools, charter schools, rural, urban. We see the similar patterns, and schools will they'll know about a number of young people who have mental health differences. They were on the radar. They've been supporting them, and they identify them. And typically, we're not overburdening the family at that point. If they have services, if they have a safety plan, we're not looking to disrupt that. But there are almost always individuals who are identified, young people, and they weren't on people's radar. And it just took asking that very direct question and that young person knowing that there would be a response from a caring community that this would be helpful. One of the things that we do know that young people are much more likely to talk to other young people about this. And that can be good because it's an opportunity to share. And we always also provide response cards to say, I'm concerned about a friend. And that's another way to get support. But you put a lot of burden on a friend if you say, you know, I need you not to tell anyone. There's not help out there for me. I'm going to manage this on your own. And then, because we also, as a clinician, I see kids on that side dealing with really incredible distress, thinking that they are the one person that's keeping their friend alive when they're not professionally equipped to deal with that. So it's really, this is an opportunity to let kids know you're not being a snitch. You're not selling out your friend. The most compassionate thing you can do based on the statistics and the urgency of this issue is to get help. Sometimes we tell people, if your friend was on fire and they said, no, don't tell anyone, like, leave me alone, you wouldn't do it, would you? And so this is an opportunity to let them know this is every bit as serious. And getting help might create some stress. It's not rainbows and unicorns. Some kids might be really upset, but they're alive and they've got the opportunity for health and healing. So, I mean, what we know is 10% of your 90% of individuals who attempt suicide go on to live very meaningful lives without ever dying by suicide. So it's an opportunity and it's a bridge.
Yeah, we don't write about them, unfortunately. We do if they go on to great things. We will profile them in the Columbus Dispatch. So when these screenings occur and you get the results, what happens then, John? What's sort of the next step once you see some red flags on some of these surveys?
So before we ever do the screening, we spend a lot of time planning up front with schools and teaching them how to engage in what we call a triage process. This allows us to take those kids and sort of categorize them by level of risk and to make sure that anyone who endorses a level of extreme depression and actual specific signs of suicide, or they've said, I have thought about it, or I've engaged in suicidal behavior, then we are going to respond with them same day. It's not ethical to have them return home without a follow-up, and we do a risk assessment. So we've got folks who are trained to ask the right questions that we know do identify risk, and then we are also going to engage in a safety planning process. This isn't a prescription. It is we're working with the young person to help them know, what are the things that put me at risk? How can I keep my environment safer? Who can I talk to? What are my resources? And that has been shown to be very effective in reducing suicide risk in the short term and the long term. So we really want to have young people know that they're not alone in this, that they have been part of developing their plan for safety. And then we are always sharing that information with the family so that they can be part of that process. It's not advisable to withhold any information ever from families who are have a child who's showing these mental health signs and are at risk for suicide. So it becomes a partnership with the school and the family, and that allows us to all keep our young kids safe, and that's our priority, absolutely first and foremost.
One of the things I was really impressed with as I reported this story was how many school districts have some really innovative programs also of their own, along with a lot of times working with Nationwide and Signs of Suicide program. Some mental health initiatives, and also you mentioned parents, and I wanted to talk about this a little bit. That can be kind of scary for parents to hear that their kids are undergoing screenings, and schools generally, when they have this program, there'll be a parent conference beforehand, correct? I mean, they're involved from the start. This is not like come home from school today and Johnny filled out a suicide survey. I mean, this is,
Yeah, the schools are very planful about this, and the folks that you interviewed for the story are part of districts that value mental health, have talked about it with families many times before we're even having this discussion. We as part of our program, we always hold a caregiver evening, parent evening, to learn not only how they can be responsive to a young person's warning signs, but also know the specifics of the program, because it can be a topic that people don't get into, can be uncomfortable. There's lots of myths out there about how talking and communicating can be unhelpful. People, I think, also merge the myth that when we report really graphically, sensationally, when we glorify suicide, that actually can have some contagion and negative effects. But when we talk about suicide in a responsive way, we provide resources, we show that there's connection and healing available, and that there are there are signs we can look out for, that actually has a suicide risk reduction property. So we do want families to be part of this. Again, they are the folks that they're the experts of their own child. They spend the most time understanding the changes that could be occurring that lead up. But then again, I mentioned this gap. So we need everyone on board, and like we need friends and teachers and parents. Because the tricky thing is, and why people have such a tough time in the aftermath of a suicide, is because they think they should have caught every sign. They think they feel guilty and ashamed. But what we know is young people show different signs and symptoms to different people in different situations. So it may not be that the child was very clearly showing warning signs to one person, but they were to another group. So we really do need all these groups involved, because if even one person is trained and aware, then they can be the person that identifies this and then help the larger system. So I think that's really what we want to see happen.
It may be a tough question to answer, but are you hopeful? I mean, do you think we're on the right path here, John, in general, with the attention we're paying to this and the efforts that we're making?
I am very hopeful, actually, because just a couple of years ago, we when we started, there were few schools talking about this, and there was lots of misinformation out there. And what we've seen is that schools are willing to embrace upstream mental health prevention. It may take a while for us to see the results. So I couldn't be more discouraged from the ongoing increase in suicide rates. One suicide is too many. It breaks my heart every time we lose a young person in any of our school system, and any person of any age, because suicide risk is actually higher among older adults. But I think what we want to take hope in is that we're having a conversation, and we're having it in a more effective way. I will be the first to say that any attention is not necessarily good attention. We know that across the board, and for suicide specifically. Just raising the alarm bells and saying how awful things are is actually unhelpful. But if we start to use the science that we know can help reduce youth suicide, and what we're doing at the Center for Suicide Prevention and Research, and we have some great programs going on. There's plenty of great treatments going on, whether it's cognitive behavioral therapy, DBT, CAMS. There's lots of great programs. The Ohio Suicide Prevention Foundation and Franklin County Suicide Prevention Coalition are putting out great programs every day. So there's a momentum. But we just need to make sure we continue to get funding and resources and have the discussions that really matter. That's why I was really impressed by the stories that you and your colleagues put out, because we're talking about what can we do differently, not just this is awful, our kids are in crisis, there's nothing we can do. We can do a lot. We actually know that there's evidence that these programs work. We just need to scale them up. And fortunately, at Nationwide Children's and many of our community partners locally, you talked about Sentaro, and there's lots of other county mental health boards that are looking to do more. So I'm seeing a lot of momentum in the community, and I'd like to keep carrying this forward.
Well, that's great. Obviously, there's school districts you work with, and there's other school districts that you don't. So hopefully anyone listening to this and thinks they might want to bring this into their school district, they should reach out to John and the folks at the Center for Suicide Prevention and Research at Nationwide Children's Hospital. And we also, in the dispatch, whenever we write about suicide, at the end, we include a whole list of crisis numbers and hotline numbers to call. So hopefully there are resources out there, as you said, and hopefully people will reach out. And John, I want to thank you again for coming in. This has been great.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Ken. I appreciate it.